First, as digital technology becomes more and more essential to our everyday lives, so does the importance of cybersecurity. At the core of that is our data, which, as we find out from time to time, isn't as secure as we'd like it to be. In an attempt to protect data, encryption has emerged as a popular and useful tool, shielding our online conversations and other data from those who shouldn't be seeing it and offering other protections as well. But some government agencies have pushed back, according to our next guest. Because criminal investigations can sometimes be hampered by encryption, these agencies pushed for a weakening of protections, which could make it easier to crack into a secured iPhone or computer system. She says that's the wrong move, especially at a time when we're more reliant on data and devices than ever. Susan Landau is a bridge professor at the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy and the School of Engineering's Department of Computer Science at Tufts University. Her new book is Listening In, Cybersecurity in an Insecure Age. Susan, welcome back to the show.
Thanks very much for having me.
Well, a core problem, it seems, Susan, is that you're pointing out in your book is that technology has evolved really quickly. We're doing more and more stuff with it, and we really have not kept up with it in terms of law and our personal behavior. Do I have that right?
Absolutely. We used to talk ephemerally. That is, I would have a conversation with you in person or maybe on the phone, and there'd be no record of it except in our own minds. Now, when we do email, when we do instant messaging, lots of those types of communication are kept permanently, and we don't really think about the consequence of keeping various of those messages permanent. At the same time, law enforcement is still hearkening back to the kinds of tools it had 20 years ago. It has different kinds of tools now, many more, but some of the tools it had, like wiretapping, are sometimes harder to use.
On a personal basis, I think we can all hear, you know, protect your data. Yeah, that's important. We don't want identity theft or our credit records hacked or anything like that. But when we talk about solutions like data protection or encryption, our eyes glaze over. We think that's stuff for a big, fancy government institution or something like that. Is this something we should be trying to get excited about and interested in?
I think rather than excited, I think part of the problem has been technologists haven't made the systems as easy to use as possible. That's changing now somewhat. There are companies like Duo in Michigan or Google has Google Authenticator, which makes it easier to do what's called second-factor authentication. So in addition to using a password to access an account, you actually have to use a different factor, like some data from your phone, some data that is computed on your phone, so that if you don't have your phone or if somebody else doesn't have your phone, they've just stolen your password, they can't get on.
Let's talk about that encryption angle, and I mentioned the federal law enforcement agencies on the one hand and technology companies and others on the other. Spell out this encryption debate for us.
Sure. There are two issues in the encryption debate. There's what's called end-to-end encryption, which is encrypting communication. So if you and I were talking on a telephone and we had the communication end-to-end encrypted, you'd be able to understand me because it would be decrypted at your end. I'd be able to understand you because it would be decrypted at my end. But anybody who listened in, any wiretap in the middle, wouldn't be able to hear anything but noise. So that's end-to-end encryption. The other issue is locked devices, like the iPhone of the San Bernardino terrorist. Apple and Android have both started making the phones harder to open up without knowledge of the password, and that was to protect data on the phones. People increasingly keep all sorts of personal and professional information on the phone, and it was subject to identity theft and other problems. And so Apple first and then Android began making it harder to open the phones. Well, law enforcement objects because while they believe in security for individuals, they also want to be able to do investigations, and they found the wiretapping has become more difficult, and now opening phones has as well.
Your concern there, though, is that if we give a back door, as people call it, to, say, the FBI to get into anybody's phone whenever they want to, there's no way to restrict it so that only the FBI is going to know about it.
Well, it's close, but not quite it.
Okay.
The problem is that when you create a break in the encryption, when you make it easier for somebody else to get in, you create a more complex encryption system. We know from decades of building computer systems that complexity is the enemy of good security. Once you make it easy for one person to break in, then you make it easier for others. That's one problem. Another problem is that technology has enabled us to recapture some of that ephemerality of communications. That is, when you and I talk, You and I know it, but you'll just repeat what I said to somebody else. It won't be my words unless it's a piece of email, in which case you can forward it. What encryption enables us to do is a kind of technique called forward secrecy, in which each communication has its own encryption key, making it much more secure. It means that somebody who wanted to capture all of our communications would have to break each and every key. That's too hard. If law enforcement had its way, one of the problems is we'd lose that protection. So we lose all sorts of protections because what law enforcement wants makes it harder to have good security. The same thing is true about opening phones, that the kinds of protections that Apple, and I know the Apple technology somewhat better, so that's the one I'll speak to, the kind of protections that Apple has put into securing the phones become vulnerable if law enforcement, which is to say the FBI, has its way and it becomes easier to open phones rather than harder.
We're talking to Susan Landau. Her new book is called Listening, Cybersecurity in an Insecure Age. Susan, can you talk about how the threat to our cybersecurity has developed over the years, what targets there are, and who's chasing these targets?
Sure. So back in the 80s, it was governments going after military information. The U.S. found it out because of a 75-cent discrepancy in an account at Lawrence Berkeley Labs. By the 1990s, governments were going after government information. What did the EPA know? What did other government agencies know? And so it was other governments going after the U.S., but presumably also the U.S. was also eavesdropping elsewhere. In the 2000s, it shifted completely, and it shifted to lots of cyber espionage, cyber exploits against the private sector. Theft of intellectual property, and I don't mean movies and films. I mean software. I mean plans for creating drugs or airplane wings or all sorts of information like that. So taking research that took years to develop, stealing it, and then building that same equipment somewhere else without having to invest in all the intellectual work to get there. What we saw in the last election was something else entirely. We saw the weaponization of political information. So we'd seen political information stolen before, but the release of Hillary Clinton's emails, drip by drip by drip by WikiLeaks, created a dynamic within the campaign that was very hard to recover from. That, combined with the fake news and disinformation that was done, is a real threat to civil society. And I think unanticipated by the U.S. and other governments, and quite dangerous because it's not clear how to respond.
Let's take this to the personal level now. We've got our phones with all of our stuff on it, our laptops with a lot of information. Now we're getting health sensors and monitors of various sources. What are we as individuals at risk of now?
So it depends on who you are and what it is you have to protect. You, for example, are a radio personality. You're a somewhat public figure. So there's lots more personal information that people would be interested in about you than they might be about, say, a professor or somebody working at Starbucks. But all of us have information about ourselves that we don't want known, whether it's a child who has a medical problem or a family member who maybe drinks too much, or maybe the fact that we didn't do so well on an exam or we lost our job before this one. So all sorts of information about ourselves, whether we're going to Alcoholics Anonymous, whether we are calling up an abortion clinic, and the information that is on our phones, it might include where we're calling, it does include where we're calling, it includes the location history of where we've been, if we have maps turned on, all of that is very personal, and all of a sudden they're records in a way that we've never had before.
We're talking about cybersecurity, the battle over encryption, and what the future holds for the safety of our data. Our guest is Susan Landau, author of the new book, Listening In, Cybersecurity in an Insecure Age. You can join in with your questions and comments at 800-642-1234. Do you take cybersecurity seriously in your daily life, Or do you just let it ride with whatever the default is on your phone or your laptop or the website you log into? Is it important to you that a device or app has some kind of encryption function? Do you think that federal law enforcement should have a backdoor to gain access to people's phones and other devices in criminal investigations? And again, what questions do you have for our guest? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Susan Landau is with us. Her new book is called Listening In, Cybersecurity in an Insecure Age. We're talking about protection of our data, encryption, and a lot more. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Is cybersecurity something that has you worried? How important is encryption to you on your devices? Do you ever stop and think about all the stuff you've searched for, entered online, and what the wrong people could do with that information? And what questions do you have for our guest? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Susan, let's talk about what we can do first before we get to a national level. At an individual level, is there much we can do?
Sure. One thing you can do is use second-factor authentication to secure your accounts. It used to be hard to do that, but now, as I said, there are various applications. Google Authenticator is one that's free to download, and some accounts have that. Use good passwords, of course. But the other thing, I think probably the most important thing, is to look at what information is leaking out of your cell phone, what information you're supplying to different apps that you use. I tend to be quite conservative in what apps I use, and I'm very conservative on what information they can get. It means sometimes it's a little bit harder for me to use the app as well as I might because I'm limiting what information it has about me, but the trade-off for me of better security is worth it. And that's a big piece of what I do to keep myself safe.
Okay, that's us as individuals. Now, how about at the national level, the federal level? What should we be doing in the United States that we are not?
We have not thought much about liability and what happens when programs aren't secure. We haven't pushed hard to insist that everybody update all the time. So one of the things, when you asked me my last question, I should have said the most important thing I do, of course, is to update whenever the programs I'm using need it, immediately, always. And so the federal government has not always kept its own house in order. One of the reasons it hasn't kept its own house in order is we've had a mistaken belief that when you buy computers, that's the investment you do, you're done. But in fact, maintenance is the bigger issue. And keeping systems properly maintained and updated and secure is really important. So if you go back to a ransomware attack we had a year ago in which many people's systems, the data on their systems was encrypted and they couldn't get it decrypted unless they paid a ransom. And sometimes if they did pay a ransom, they still didn't get it decrypted. Part of the problem from that came from the fact that certain places like hospitals in the UK were using old operating systems for which they didn't have patches, and that's why they were attacked.
We're talking about cybersecurity with Susan Landau, author of the new book, Listening In. We'll go to your calls now at 800-642-1234. Jenny is with us in Williams Bay. Jenny, hi.
Hi. I have a question for your guest. My sister, just a few days ago, was calling me convinced that her phone was listening to her. She was reading a Magic Treehouse book to her kids, and then that night she got a suggested post by Instagram for the Magic Treehouse series, and she was convinced that her phone was listening to her read the story to her kids, and that's how the suggested. I'm not laughing at her, but I think I told her it was a little bit out there, and I'm wondering if that's even possible that cell phones can do that.
Jenny, thanks for the call. Susan, the title of your book's Listening In. Is it that literal?
Yes, it's certainly the case that phones can be turned into eavesdropping devices, which is why if you're going somewhere where you are worried about being eavesdropped upon, you don't just shut it off, you actually take the battery out. That said, one of the things we think about in security is what's your threat model? Who is it who's likely to attack you? So if your sister is working for an important government agency or working for an important business that's about to launch a new product, and is about to travel somewhere where there's competition, that's one reason to suspect that maybe her phone is eavesdropping on her. Other than that, I suspect the more likely reason is that at some point recently she was actually looking for those books online and the ad just happened to turn up at the right moment. We tend to find coincidences often where there aren't coincidences. It's just that we haven't noticed the previous occurrences, and then all of a sudden when we see one just after we read a book or saw friends with twins, and then we see other twins, we say, oh, there are lots of twins, but previously we didn't notice them. So I suspect it's more noticing rather than anybody actually eavesdropping on her.
Jenny, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. This has been a concern for top government officials in the White House, the cabinet, places like that, hasn't it?
Absolutely. So that after the election, the Wall Street Journal reported that Obama's people, Clinton's people, and Trump's people were all using Signal, which is an end-to-end encrypted communication system, which has the advantage that, of course, because of the way the communication works, there is no saving of the communication. That is, there's no record afterwards of what people said. And so that after the Podesta email thefts, that seemed like a very important thing to do.
I'm going to look at some of the frontiers of technology now. We keep hearing about the Internet of Things, where our appliances, I guess, refrigerators, those health monitors I mentioned earlier, they're all connected to the Internet and our phones and things like that. What are your worries as we start to do this?
We don't have good privacy laws about how that such data can be used. So if you go back to the 1960s and 70s, at that period, all of a sudden, banks and financial institutions had a lot more information about whether people were able to repay loans. And the balance of power tipped towards the banks because they knew when a prospective borrower came in, they knew an awful lot about him or her. And we got the Fair Credit Reporting Act, which said, okay, the credit bureaus are not allowed to report to the banks or other financial institutions about your creditworthiness without your permission. We were controlling use of the data. One thing we don't have right now is a good model of controlling use of the data. What happens to the information from your Fitbit? You may have a privacy policy from Fitbit, but Fitbit could also change the privacy policy. We don't have good laws on controlling the use of data, and that concerns me a great deal, especially about the Internet of Things.
I want to bring on a caller again. Bernadette is with us in Wauwatosa. Bernadette, hi.
Hi. Several months ago, I like this show. It's a great show. Several months ago, somebody private messaged me, you know, through the Facebook private message, but it's supposed to be private, a name of a doctor. I'd asked her for a referral, and I was sitting next to my laptop, but I read it on my phone, and so right after I read her private message, I went to Google on my laptop and typed in DR, and his name filled in.
Wow.
I didn't even type the first letter of his name.
Bernadette, thanks for the call. And Susan, that's a big concern, is sort of the cross-platform. Since our phones and computers do everything, they may surprise us in how they communicate.
That's right. So I can't explain this particular one, but it's certainly the case that if Facebook Messenger was open on the laptop as well as on the phone, that it could have been that the information had come there. However, how it got to Google, it's not clear to me. I would say one interesting question is to have somebody else type in your locality VR, but you also need to know what other searches you'd been doing recently, because, of course, Google tries to personalize search. So if, for example, you've been looking a lot for automobiles and you start to type in VOL, for example. Now, VOL might be for volume. It might be for lots of things beginning with VOL. But if you've been looking at cars a lot lately, then it's likely that Google would respond by filling in Volvo right away.
Thanks for the call, Bernadette. Susan, in our last couple minutes, we talked a little bit about federal government priorities here. With all the attacks we've seen, with what happened during the elections, do you see a sense of urgency about this?
I don't see nearly the sense of urgency that there ought to be. I think the threats to our civil society are very great. We had talked for a long time about a cyber Pearl Harbor, which people thought was exaggerated, but we understood how to respond if another government attacked critical infrastructure. We seem to have no mental model and no policy that adequately responds to attacking our civil society, not just our political parties and the election process, but more long-term, the kind of divisiveness that is being brought by outsiders to various civil discussions like Black Lives Matter, like the shooting in Texas where wrong information was posted first and rose to the top. So I think that the lack of response by the federal government to these attacks is actually very damaging, and they should be responded to as if they were what we call kinetic attacks or physical attacks.
If we can't trust our internet at this point, it's making it harder for us to trust each other. Is that right in our last few moments?
That's absolutely right. And we've lost, because of the internet, we've lost a lot of the private sector, public sector sources of information. The number of newspapers has gone down. The number of authoritative sources has gone down. And so we're relying more on the internet. But there's a lot of disinformation that's being put through it, some of it by foreign parties in an attempt to disrupt us.
Susan, thanks a lot for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me.
That's Susan Landau. She's a bridge professor at the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy and the School of Engineering's Department of Computer Science at Tufts University. We've been talking about her new book. It's called Listening In, Cybersecurity in an Insecure Age. Still time to share your thoughts, maybe your anecdotes. Head over to the Ideas Network Facebook page or tweet us at Central Time WPR.